DW Africa Link.
World Rural Development Day is observed every year on the 6th of July. The day serves as a global call to action for collaborative efforts in transforming rural areas into thriving, resilient, and sustainable communities. It also highlights the critical role rural communities play in food production, ecosystem balance, and socio-economic well-being. Women are the backbone of rural economies, especially in agriculture, where they make up much of the workforce. Yet, they face higher poverty, lower literacy, and limited access to land and resources. In northern Ghana, for instance, women face challenges such as lack of access to credit, limited control over land, and cultural norms that restrict their mobility and decision-making power. Across sub-Saharan Africa, only 15% of women own land, making it harder for them to access loans or grow their businesses. They are often left out of decisions at home and in their communities, held back to deep-rooted gender roles and cultural norms. In Ghana, some women are breaking barriers by contributing to food security in rural areas. But how challenging is that? And what does the future hold? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
In northern Ghana, rural women are coming together to fight poverty, discrimination, and economic abuse by forming cooperatives and support groups. Through activities like shea butter production, village saving schemes, and agro-processing, they are building resilience and independence. The Songba Women's Group, for example, is using shea butter to transform their lives, turning a local tradition into a powerful tool for economic freedom and community strength. I am joined by Wedam Kadua Roda, a social entrepreneur and CEO of a women's initiative called Songba Empowerment Center to impact the lives of women and girls. I also have DW's Maxwell Souk covering northern Ghana to discuss the role of women in building their communities. Hello to the both of you. Welcome to the Africa Link podcast. Now, let me start with you, Wedam, because we're talking about women contributing to food security in rural Ghana. Why is that important?
Thank you very much for having me. And I'm really grateful to join the conversation. So I would say it's very, very important for women to play a role in food security in rural communities because women are mostly responsible for growing crops and processing food in our communities. And this is very important because of their involvement in these activities, their engagement in the growing of crops, the processing of food, and also the raising of livestock in the rural communities help produce up to 80% of household of the food that we eat. And their farming efforts directly support the household nutrition and the community food that is available. You get to the communities and realize most of the people that come to sell food in the market are mostly women. So it's very important that all women engage in food security.
Right. It almost sounds to me that women are running things in this regard. What are the men doing?
Yes, so the men are also playing their role. I wouldn't say men are not participating, but what I would say is that the gender that is mostly engaged in these activities are women. I wouldn't say when we go to the market, we don't see men selling. We have the men, but you see that out of 100%, most of them, or 80% are the women that we are talking about here.
Right, right. And What is the situation in rural Ghana that needs sort of women, especially, but also men, to be all hands on deck to, you know, contribute to food security? Is the situation dire, or is it that you're doing this to prevent the situation from becoming dire?
I will say not because there is shortage of food, but when it comes to food, everyone is needed to support in this regard. Feeding everybody eats, men eat, women eat, children eat. Very importantly, the children that we are raising, we need to be able to get the required nutrition for these children to grow well. So everyone is needed in this regard to ensure that we grow the food that we need to eat. The challenge that we have is that most of the women are often faced with barriers to inadequate land, lack of finance, lack of training to be able to grow their own crops. So they tend to rely on the lands of their husbands or the men to do that. So both the men and women are needed in this regard. The men have the lands the women do not have. The men have the finances the women do not have. So it goes hand in hand. We both support each other.
Right, which is fair enough. But why is that the case that men have the lands and the funds and the women don't?
So if you come to rural communities, especially in the northern sector, women do not own lands. The lands belongs to their husbands.
Why?
Because this is what I call it a cultural thing, because that is what we have come to meet in the communities or in the society in which we live. And that is what we have been fighting for, that women also have the equal right to have access to their own lands. Because we grew up seeing that it's only the men that have access to the land, and the women are only expected to support their husbands on their farms. And this has been one of the challenges that we have been battling with. We are still advocating that women should be given the opportunity to own their lands, which will enable them to be able to also have a decision on what they want to do on the land.
Right, right. Very interesting point that you raised there. And then this is where your initiative, Songba Empowerment Center, comes in, because you're trying to impact the lives of women and girls to basically empower them. Tell us more about these women that you're dealing with now. What was their situation when you first met them, and what is the situation now?
Okay. So when I first met this woman, they are located in the northern parts of the country. And when I first came into contact with these women, I realized that they were already trapped in the cycle of poverty. This woman had limited control over their own resources. This woman mostly depended on small season farmers. So usually during the farming season is when they also have to rely on the farms of their husbands to be able to grow something for themselves. And during harvesting period is when they move from one farmer to the other, help the person to cultivate what he or she has produced. Then the person in turn give them a bag in return. So when you support me to harvest my crops, I don't pay you in the rural community. Rather, I pay you with the food crop that you help me to produce. And that is what most of them usually keep and helps them to be able to feed their families. Or they're also able to sell it. But I will say that with our interventions, the story has changed, because today, these women are now part of a structured cooperative shea butter processing company, where they have learned to add value to the shea nut, because it's something they already do, not that they don't do it, but what they were doing could not give them access to a larger market. But today, due to the structured cooperative, these women have been able to learn how to add value to the shea nut, and they are now able to manage the business on their own. Through this, again, we'll be able to establish a VSLA, that is village savings and loans for them. So they are able to also save, to be able to invest more into the business. Yes. And one important thing is that with what they were doing, We're producing this shea butter in a small quantity, which was only sent to the local market for sale. And whenever she finished selling, she just used them to buy foodstuffs, return home to cook with it. So the question is, how long will it take her to be able to be financially structured cooperative system?
Right.
These women, they're attracted to the international market because there is no serious buyer. Anyone interested in buying shea butter in larger quantities will want to deal with a cooperative, you know. And whenever she finished selling, she just used them to buy foodstuffs, return home to cook with it. So the question is, how long will it take her to be able to be financially structured cooperative system?
Right.
These women, they're attracted to international market because there is no serious buyer. Anyone interested in buying shea butter in larger quantities will want to deal with a cooperative, you know. They wouldn't
right.
want to deal with an individual.
Okay.
Because they know okay. when we request for any quantity of shea butter.
Thank you for that. Maxwell, I mean, you've been our reporter on the ground. You've been reporting on such issues for a long time. Ruda has just sort of mentioned some of the challenges that women overall face. Tell us more about the limitations they face and what seems to be the main challenge.
Most rural women are expected to, you know, it's a norm, and that's one of the biggest limitations for these women, as Ruda put it. So it's like a norm, and once you live in a rural area, or you were brought up in a rural area, or you stay there, then you are supposed to live by this norm, especially when you migrate as a young person there, that's better than when you marry, then you live there entirely. So you have a set of norms that you're supposed to live. That's by, you know, you need to be submissive, you need to labor in the farm, you don't have your own time. You're even some of them who manage to acquire their resources, let's say buy livestock or get grains, or maybe the fields, the okra field or granite field or whatever, you have to buy in the name of your husband because you are a woman. So mostly they do not really have ground standing properly when it comes to resource management and all that. It comes down to the point why they have to borrow land from their husbands. If I have a father who has children, including sons and daughters, and I'm sharing land to my children, then the man gets it. The woman will not get, because the assumption is that she's going to marry somewhere else. So those are part of the thing. And, you know, because of illiteracy problems also, they are limited. Their search for opportunities or how to take advantage of opportunities quite limited. And more so is because they work individually sometimes. So when they go to the markets with their grains, with their whatever they have, you know, it's quite easy for buyers to take advantage of them. So there's a whole lot, including culture, I mean norms, including illiteracy and the lack of opportunities around them. This quite most often their limitations.
Right, right. I mean, there seems to be just a lot of limitations, and culture is definitely playing a role, as Wedam also alluded to. But are there any signs of change in the community that women are somehow feeling a bit more empowered? And I'm not just talking about what Wedam has been doing, but overall in the community, is there a sense that things are changing, Maxwell?
Well, we will say compared to in 2025 and then in the year 1980s or so, there's gradually been some shifts from how people originally, how communities were, because maybe there's been some investment, there's been some NGO penetration, there's been some policies, for instance, gender affirmative actions that, you know, probably frown on certain behaviors and attitude of, you know, couples or spouses. So we could, for instance, the domestic violence bill that protects more women, either economically or in terms of abuse, they are there. So we see people going in to educate women in the light. Then there's also a group that probably targets women financial illiteracy, building them and showing them what to do. So there are people who are able to put women together to see that, okay, you are not like the corporate woman, you don't mantle salaries, but then this is how you can put the coins together to be able to, you know, build resilience. So you go around the country, you may in the north, you will see that there are village savings groups, and that for them, those are their safety nets. When a child is sick, they go there. When somebody has to go to school, immediately, when the harvest is not near, they can go there and pick. When they do all the petty trading, and then they save their cents, like at the end of the day, the seeds, at the end of the day, they're able to go there when there's a need. So there is that shift of an openness to them that they can be able, this is how you can be able to build resilience. Right. Now, we also get to see that because they are educating their children who are also coming back and then prioritizing the welfare of the families, there is that gradual departure from, you know, typical behaviors that limits this woman further. Now we see that even though it's like, a baby step move, but holistically we see that there's that gradual shift, you know, small.
Right. I like the way you added small, small. And whether baby steps or little drops of water make an ocean, it is said. You know, we've talked about societal challenges. We've talked about cultural challenges, family challenges. What has been the norm that somehow many women are trying to break the shackles of old. So bearing all that in mind, what do you think needs to change now to help empower women even more?
There is a call to everyone. It's a call to the government. It's a call to the civil society to come out with initiatives or programs that will help us to sensitize men and women more, especially men in this regard, to be able to give women the opportunity to also have access to their own lands, or to give women the opportunity to be able to also speak out for themselves, not to put women in the corner, or not to say that the role of a woman is supposed to be in the kitchen. So we need to, the advocacy, we need to intensify the advocacy. We need to be able to intensify such activities so that it can help solve some of these challenges.
Right. And the challenges are many and heavy. I mean,
There are so many.
And to talk about the fact that a woman still in 2025 can almost do nothing without the support or backing of the husband just seems so old-fashioned and wrong. But as you said, there's some bright spots coming up, because abuse of women has also been, you know, quite a challenge, especially in rural areas. We know the country or Ghana recently passed the affirmative action law. What does that mean for rural women in Ghana and their liberation from abuse and discrimination at home?
I would say that laws alone cannot change our societal norms. So the rural women will still face structural and also cultural barriers that will hinder their progress. And the law, I would say, provides a foundation, but definitely it must be backed by the implementation of education. It must be backed by monitoring. It must be backed by budget, budget allocation, and a committee-level action for this affirmative action bill to be well implemented in the communities. And I would say true liberation will come when it will only come to these women. It needs to be backed with education. We also need to monitor it. and also ensure that the affirmative action bill is well implemented in the communities.
Right. Thank you very much, Wedham, for that. I think you couldn't have said it better. Maxwell, as we wrap this up, you've been speaking to even many more experts who are addressing the challenges that women have been facing, especially in rural Ghana. What is the main solution that they give, aside what Wedham has said, as to how women can break loose from the current situation that most of them find themselves in?
So I think if you ask gender activists and also people who are into policy and women development, they tell you that we need the country to do a total overhaul of its policies and also the social norms and practices. The ones that are bad, we throw them away, and then the ones that are good, then we keep them. So if we realize that, you know, this attitude that we are having, it doesn't help one group of people, especially these women. It doesn't help to unleash their potential. It doesn't help to, you know, balance the society. Then we need to drop it and then let them stick to policies that appreciate equality, that appreciate progress of women. Mostly, right. I think there's that call on government to probably look at how not to leverage on the fact that there's so much illiteracy or there's so much confusion around norms and all this is with policies, but rather to go to take a strong stand on sensitization, fund NGOs, fund groups, you know, or let your government organizations go to the communities to really do, you know, more of the work and letting people understand that this behavior, this is how it limits people and this is how it affects people. As we said in the beginning, 60% of the farm labor is done by women. You know, they sow, they keep the seeds, they provide everything and all that in the farms. So they feed this country, they feed the communities, and they feed their households. So why can't we really prioritize their welfare also?
Right, rightfully so. That should be the case. Wedham, you have the final words, and I just can't help but think about how strong women are, even with all these challenges that they are facing. Tell us more about the strength of a woman as we wrap this up.
A woman is a pillar not only to her family, but also to the community and to the country as a whole. When a woman is empowered, she's able to support not only her family. This woman is not only doesn't only support the community, but also the country as a whole. So the economic empowerment of a woman is very, very important because the women are pillars wherever they find themselves. So the empowerment of a woman is very, very important because if we're able to empower them or if you're able to economically empower these women, it's not only her family that is going to benefit, but the entire community and also the country as a whole.
Fascinating discussion. Thank you very much, Wedham Kadua Roda, social entrepreneur and CEO of women's initiative called Songba Empowerment Center, which aims to impact the lives of women and girls. Also, many thanks to you, DW's Maxwell Souk, covering Northern Ghana for us. Now, women make up about 50% of Ghana's agricultural labor force, but own only 20% of the land they farm. This stark inequality is a clear injustice, and yet they play vital roles in cultivating, processing, and marketing food crops such as maize, cassava, and tomatoes. When women have equal access to resources and decision-making, entire communities benefit through increased productivity, better nutrition, and sustainable development. For me, it's interesting to note that despite all these challenges, rural women are resilient, sustaining their families and communities, and driving local food systems. Now that's what I call the strength of a woman. Share your thoughts with us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Don't forget to click follow and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.